This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Timothy Harfield from Jasper, Georgia, and you're listening to a special Horse Husbands Only edition of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 28th, brought to you today by the Shake and Fork.
I am a manly man who lives a manly life in my manly house with my manly wife.
And now, from the Man Cave at the Horse Radio Network, the monthly Horse Husbands episode starring Timothy Harfield of HorseHubby.com and America's Horse Husband, Glenn the Geek. This one is for you guys. No horse women allowed.
Well, welcome everybody to the show. It's good to have you back to the special Horse Husbands episode. And of course, that means no women allowed. Any kind of women, horse women, non-horse women, just we don't talk to women on this show. We're talking to horse husbands. And we have a bunch of them lined up for you today. We have Joseph, who's a helicopter pilot, really cool job, married into the horse thing, and also happens to be our new sponsor from Shake and Fork. Tom Laux. You might recognize the name Laux because Debbie Laux is the host of the Horsemanship Radio Show, the daughter of Monty Roberts. And I got to ask him if he knew he was marrying into a dynasty. And then we also are going to take a look at what horse husbands really do when their wives are out of town. And then you have the last guest that you booked.
Yeah. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hi.
I just went right into it.
Yeah, Brian Rosati, he's one of the winners of the Horse Hubby calendar contest. He had a tremendous image, and he wrote a great post for us on some essential characteristics of a horsewoman, which surprisingly resonated with horsewomen, didn't offend so much. Very funny. We're looking forward to having him on the show.
Very good. Sounds like a complete show. And I know you've had some things going over there at horsehubby.com.
Yeah, I do at horsehubby.com and also with my wife, Elisa Wallace, of course, as you know. I found with the new year, I'm getting myself deeper and deeper into this horse thing, especially the business side. Elisa has an opportunity, or she was given an opportunity this year, to acquire her four-star horse, Simply Priceless, from the original owners. But of course, a horse like that doesn't come cheap. And so what she's ended up doing is forming a syndicate and is in the process of trying to find people who are interested in joining her team and buying a chair and supporting her and Simply Priceless in their four-star career. That's really exciting. It's also a little bit cause for anxiety in a lot of respects because there's a lot of money involved here. So her father has been really helpful in terms of acquiring a bridge loan. He's now owns all 10 shares of Simply Priceless. But over the next year, we're looking to sell all of those shares. It's really exciting for us. We're so glad that we can keep Simply Priceless and continue to develop his potential. Elisa wrote a really great article. I wish to put in the show notes for Eventing Nation describing her story. That's really exciting for us. But, you know, as soon as you have money involved, you know that you've got some skin in the game. So I have some skin in the game now more than ever. We've also been co-producing.
Hey, can I just stop you there? Yep. Welcome to our world. Just OK, go ahead.
Yeah, it's such a played out expression. But how do you horses are a great way to make a small fortune, start with a large fortune and then get into horses. Yeah. I've said it before. I'll say it again. And it's really becoming a reality. But we're really fortunate to have strong supporters in this. It's an adventure. It really is.
And it's a roller coaster ride. You know, this whole horse thing is such a roller coaster ride of emotions and of just of everything. It really is. And you know what? The highs are really why we stick around and why it's worth it. So
And the lows are learning experiences. So that there's
that's what they say. It sure doesn't feel that way when you're in them, does it?
It doesn't. But related to that, these video blogs that we're producing on a weekly basis are an opportunity for us to really share some of those highs and lows. So again, that's created a lot of work for us on a weekly basis, but it's been a lot of fun for Elise and I to collaborate. I have some video skills and we've invested in some equipment, but Elise, of course, has the eye for horses. And so over the past, I think we're into our 12th episode this week, really learning what appeals to audiences. And apparently, Elisa Wallace wiggling her little butt in front of a horse is really appealing to a lot of people.
I saw that video. I did see that video, and I didn't know the girl could dance.
Neither did I. The things your wife does when you're away at work. No, she was dancing, and I think within a day we had over 300,000 views, and it had been shared 6,000 times. Just crazy.
I'll post that video on our show notes as well at horsesinthemorning.com, because it was definitely worth a watch seeing your wife out there all by herself dancing with her horse.
Yeah, and really good. What Elisa said is that a lot of people take their relationship with their horse and their horsemanship really seriously, and it's important, but it's also important to have a lot of fun with your horse. And so it's a really sort of humanizing moment that everybody can relate to. She had people emulating, sending in videos of themselves dancing with horses. It was also cause for some controversy. Surprisingly, there are a lot more shares than there were likes on that video.
Why was the controversy?
Is she desensitizing the horse or is she flooding the horse? And I had no idea what that distinction was, Glenn.
I just thought she was just playing with the horse and having some fun.
That's what she's doing. And, you get to that point. Of course, that horse is not just a regular horse, Glenn. It's a Mustang. So it's a wild Mustang that she's had in training for a while. She's been working carefully and progressively to introduce things into its environment and to make it feel comfortable and at ease. But then people
chill
take
out,
a video
people
like that out of context.
Chill out, people.
So an opportunity to educate some people and to build new fans. So that was really good. She really connected with people, and we continue to understand and connect with an audience and really sort of promote excellence in horsemanship, which is really exciting. And that's about my wife. Horsehubby.com is going strong. We're really looking forward to the next year, and we're going to start the year with a new logo, which is currently being designed.
I saw some of the renditions of that.
I know you're in the focus group, Glenn.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if you knew that.
I saw, I had an original pick, and then some of the other people in the focus group talked me right out of it into the other one. So,
it's been a really interesting process. I went with 99 Designs, which is a way of sort of crowdsourcing these designs. It's economical.
I've used them
you get a
too.
Lot of you have.
Yeah.
No, you really see excellent work. Originally, when you see the designs come in, you realize just how complex the concept of a horse hubby is. It's not something that a lot of people get. But we've got some designs that we're working with now that I feel really good about, and I'm looking forward to unveiling the new Horse Hubby logo sometime in the coming weeks. So that's all really
exciting.
I want
the first t-shirt, okay?
You got it.
All right, good. Good. I want the t-shirt.
You got to deck these dudes out. You got a you need a way to identify yourself and to identify others at a horse show. So I expect that once we have the logo and we have the t-shirts made, that every horse hubby out there is going to wear these shirts.
Everybody can be representing at Rolex.
Right.
Yes. Is your wife going to be at Rolex this year riding?
That's the plan.
Oh, good. Cool.
That's the plan.
Cool. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show, but we have to go to our first guest already. And coming up, we have right now Joseph, who you've heard on Horses in the Morning before, if you listen to the show. He is from the company called Equity. He makes a shake and fork and a flex and fork. They've been advertising with us for years and been doing really bad ads for a long time, but he wanted to switch over to the Horse Husbands episode every month. And we're going to get him on. He also has a really cool real job, and his real job is he's a helicopter pilot. And he flies the West Coast Fires. So we're going to talk to him about that, because what's more manly than that? We really have to talk about that. Because you know what? One of the other cool things that we've discovered doing the Horse Husbands episode is what cool real jobs these guys have, right? Most of them have some really fun, really cool jobs, and it's fun to hear about those too. So that's coming up right now. Well, welcome back to the show, Joseph. You've just never been on the Horse Husbands edition before.
I haven't. And thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're still with us as well. And we really appreciate you sponsoring the Horse Husbands Edition. You're going to reach a whole new audience here with your tremendous products. I do want to tell you real quick before we get into one of the things I really want to talk to you about, and that's being a helicopter pilot, is that in our auditor group, they have a private Facebook page, and there's been all these discussions about the Flex and Fork and Shake and Fork, and I know that you've made some sales here in the last week or two because they've been all talking about it. So I'm glad that that happened, and I've been keeping an eye on that. But you have you're a horse husband for sure to the like 10th degree. But I don't want to talk to you about any of that. I really want to talk to you about being a helicopter pilot, and you actually helped fight fires. How did you start flying?
Oh gosh. You know, it's one of those things like Jamie talks about where you get on a horse when you're young and it's like, that's it. That's what I want to do. And when I was perhaps 10 years old, I went in for my first flight in a plane that was similar to the type used in Sky King, which was a Cessna 310. And you know, I can barely see over the top of the cockpit panel, and the guy gives me the controls, and I'm actually flying this object through space. And that was it. And I came up through the years, and Vietnam came along, and it was my goal to be a Vietnam Huey pilot. And fortunately, as it turned out, I was too young by 6 months to get into Vietnam. But I pursued the...
Yeah, you know what? Huey pilots didn't do so well in Vietnam. So you were fortunate. Yeah.
You know, if you look at the statistics about Huey pilots back then, at the end of the war, a Huey pilot lasted 50 hours, which was about a week of flying. So,
and for those that don't know, that was the troop transporter, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Or the Slicks, which were the people that went in and did the medical evacuations. And it's the bravery of those pilots back then. It just really defies belief, especially like I am where I'm flying a Huey these days. I fly the commercial version of that same helicopter. And I go in there and I've got this thing that has jet fuel around me and it's made out of recycled beer cans. And you think these guys were going in up against rocket-propelled grenades to shoot them down and against 50 caliber machine guns with the same helicopter. And I can't even hardly fathom what it must have been like for those vets back then. Astonishing.
Now, when did you make the transition from fixed wing to rotor?
It was about 25 years ago, is after the Vietnam War ended. There was a tremendous surplus of all kinds of pilots, and the airlines had gone to a B scale. I think at the time they were paying $1,000 a month for a co-pilot, and that absolutely, I mean, I thought that was ridiculous for what the job entailed. But I found out in helicopters, they just cared if you could fly. And I thought, you know, that's my kind of a job where whether you're hired or not is whether or not you can actually do what it is that you're paid to do. And that's still the case today.
So helicopter pilots still tend to make more than fixed wing?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. I would say by and large, if you're getting into the industry right now as an airline pilot, the pay is about $22,000 a year for a co-pilot for a major airline. It's really pathetic. And even once you get into the captain seat, it's really surprisingly not as high as it could be now. Of course, eventually you become, you know, an overseas pilot or 747 or something like that. And then it's, you know, it's multi six figure salary, but.
Well, now, and I know, you know, you talk about not getting shot at, but you're doing something that in the helicopter piloting world is very dangerous. And
well, that's what I was going to say is we, in the fire industry, we earn our pay. It's an incredibly stressful, intense job. We're flying as it's a saying, it's kind of trite, but we fly towards stuff that most people are running away from, and you can't get away from the stress, meaning we're basically stationed in a firehouse or we're actually at the fire itself, and you can be called at any time. And now your job is to keep your firefighter safe, don't wreck the helicopter, and then do fire suppression, and or bring firefighters in or whatever. And the statistics bear out that that the danger is that aircraft accidents are the second leading cause of firefighter fatalities after medical and behind vehicle accidents. So you've got to be really careful when you're up there. You know, you think of air tanker pilots. You hardly hear about when an air tanker crashes, but they do, and helicopters crash and so on.
And it's part of that is because of the winds that the fire creates, right?
Well, the helicopter doesn't get affected by the turbulence quite as much, but we're flying in a really limited visibility environment, of course, because of
the smoke.
And we're also close to the ground. And there's just no time to recover from anything when you're close to the ground. I mean, close to the ground, my bucket is 50 feet above the trees for an awful lot of what I do. And when I'm picking up, I can be down in holes where the rotors are actually below the tops of the trees. And so any sidewards movement. And it's not, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back.
There's I got sweaty palms just listening to it.
I work with a lot of really, really good peers in the industry there. But honestly, the guys that are in the back that are standing right in front of the fire have a tougher job than what I do. I get in the helicopter and I bring them in and then I start bringing them water. But those guys are on the ground and I have great admiration for the young guys that are out there with a, you know, essentially with a Pulaski and their muscles and getting out there and scraping fire line. It's a heck of a job. And I'm very fortunate to get to work with some wonderful people in the Forest Service and BLM.
Hmm. Wow. Is that something you'd sign up for there, Timothy?
Nope.
Makes being a doctor at a school sound pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like my office.
Yep.
I have a nice view.
It's air conditioned, heated, and you know, there aren't flames trying to take you out of the sky and you're not running into any trees.
Yeah, one of the real sad parts about it is that I meet the people that have been affected, and there's absolutely nothing that compares to the despair of people who have lost everything, and especially the grief when there's pets involved. And since I'm a horse lover in a major way, I empathize with these people, and I can tell you of all the parts of the job that is the worst. It's when you experience what other people are going through. But I want to get to a brighter note, because helicopters was what I did first, and then, of course, I became a horse husband. I didn't ride at the time. I was kind of aware of those things that my wife did, and I married her in part because she was the way that she took care of her horses. And I know that Timothy, you can agree with this, but all I want to be is taking care of the way my wife takes care of our stallion. You know, there's a special attention that women pay.
This is a PG show, Joseph.
But I found that I really like classical riding and dressage. And there's the letters that are on the sides of the arena. And there's some sort of a mnemonic that girls use Jen would probably be able to tell you, to remember the order of those letters. But I came up with my own, and it had to do with helicopters. And it says, all K-Max Enstrom helicopters can make beautiful flight. And then the intermediates are slow rotors, poor value, which, as any dressage person will tell you, that's A-K-E-H-C-M-B.
Okay, that's the most difficult analogy or way to remember anything I've ever heard. Hey, before we run out of time, we have to talk to you about something that's Joseph, very important.
So, Joseph, this shake and fork thing, it's a first. I'm new to this sort of arena. I'm also very busy. I commute to and from work 2 hours. So I'm 4 hours of on the road each day.
Wow.
I have very little time. But when I come around, I help my wife. I want to help on the weekends. I also love technology. I'm looking to optimize my entire life. And the shake and fork really seems like something that is going to help me to optimize my performance in the barn. Tell me a little bit about that.
I can. The shake and fork came about for much the same reasons as you're talking about, is I, one of my horse husband duties was to assist in cleaning the barn. And no matter how, what, two things, no matter how much care I took with the forks, I kept snapping tines. And when I would complete a stall and get it as clean as I could, and then I would move to the next stall, I would look down the hallway and my wife would be cleaning after.
Oh, I hate that. She, yeah. My wife still does that.
Very, very frustrating to think that I can't clean stalls to that level. And so I began to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to get the little bits out. And if you do this, I'm sure. And it's very time consuming. And I would start out in the winter with a jacket on. And by the time I was finished, I would be down to a t-shirt because you're starting and stopping your muscles. And plus you're throwing away bags of shavings and lots of manure goes into the pile. And so my inventor's mind decided that I would try to do something about it. And it took years to actually figure out what the correct frequency of the fork should be, because a human shakes it about 3 times per second. And any faster than that, the manure balls fly off. And I first tried to make a vibrating fork, but that's high frequency and low amplitude. And what we want is high amplitude and low frequency. That's what humans do. So I finally came up with that. And in the end, the shaken fork, motor, and battery takes the place of your muscles. And so instead of you physically starting and stopping your muscles by lifting and dropping the fork or shaking it from side to side, you just hold the handle still and squeeze the trigger. It's a variable speed trigger. And the trigger will imitate the motion that you do with your hand. And you can, the easiest way for me to know how much easier it is for me is that I leave my jacket on the whole time I'm cleaning. I'm literally not doing anything except moving the fork between the shavings and the manure cart.
So what you're saying is that as much as my muscles are atrophying day to day, in driving to and from work and sitting in front of the computer, I can help clean the stall in like twice. I can be done in twice the time without having to like carry around any of that excess inconvenient muscle mass. But I hear that that you're working on your next product is a combination of the shaken fork and your helicopter piloting. Don't you have a drone?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's a great idea,
that's
what Joseph.
I really want to do.
Yeah, then we could just have a remote control.
Have to leave work. You know, that's the optimum efficiency. I can help during my lunch hour with the stalls by like manipulating my little drone remotely. I think that's on your
iPhone. That's
cool. How about instead of a Roomba, we'll make a stall ball.
Oh my goodness.
That's even better.
I will invest. Right there.
And you just put a shaken rake or a shaken fork in the front of it, and it would program itself to go around the edges and pick up all the little things, and then it would go over to its little docking station and empty. Sure, you know, there's no end to this creativity.
I just got super, super excited. But I don't think you're quite right. I think the shaken fork is kind of like the shake weight. See, this is how I've never seen one in action. I'm going to go get one right now. But I know
what those are. Yeah.
Of course, you know the shake weight. So I think it's actually going to help me to tone my muscles more efficiently.
Well, here's my take on
that. I could maybe have two shaken forks going at the same time.
The better idea is to spend half the time cleaning and half the money cleaning, and then take that time and spend it on a horse and take that money and give it to your wife.
He does that anyway. So
we were just talking about that.
I got to tell you guys, I've used mine. I will tell you about something else over here. These don't break. I've used mine for now 4 years, Joseph, right? My shaken fork.
Wow.
And yeah. I've had it for 4 years. One of the incredible things, it's, you know how your cell phone, after 2 years of using it, your battery's just shot and you have to go get a new battery because it just won't recharge anymore. I've been using this thing for 4 years and it still goes like the first day. And we've had professional stall cleaners that clean 30, 40 stalls a day use these. And the one thing they say is it takes them half the time and they save half the bedding. And right there, I mean, we're saving money as horse husbands. We care about that. Right. And, you know, half the time as horse husbands, we also want to see our wives occasionally if we're not the one cleaning the stall, so they get in sooner. So either way, it's a win-win for us is the way I look at it.
And your wife won't be following you to pick up the stalls.
No, she still does that.
That was the point of my whole
story. She still does that. I have an obsessive wife. Yes. Yes.
But I like this. We've been, because Joseph, my wife and I, we do these weekly vlog episodes, and we've been thinking about doing like a competition to see who can clean the stalls faster.
Oh, you need the shaking fork.
But I that's what I think. I think that's going to be my secret weapon. Yeah. I'm not going to tell her about it.
No, don't tell her.
I'm not going to tell her about it, but we're going to do this, and we're going to have this competition. I'm going to go in there with a shaking fork, and I'm going to wipe the floor with her.
Oh, that'll be fun. I'll enjoy helping you participate in that.
That'd be awesome.
Joseph, we have to run. Where can people buy one?
Right now, you can go to equitymfg.com and you can buy it directly there. And we'll set you up with whatever battery pack, whatever tying size, whatever you need.
And we'll post it on our show notes as we usually do, and also over on our Facebook page. Thanks, Joseph, and take care out there flying the helicopters.
Well, thank you very much, Tim, and nice talking with you, Timothy.
Thank you.
Horse Husband's Lament. My wife, she has this quarter horse with flaxen mane and tail. She thinks he's the finest thing ever to trot a trail. She calls him Dandy Darling, and it's the truth I tell. That fancy pampered quarter horse has made my life pure hell. My wife, she used to cook for me and serve it with champagne. Now she'd better feed that horse and mix his special drink. She rides him every morning and grooms him half the night. The last time she kissed me was just to be polite. He dresses better than I do with matching wraps and ties. My wardrobe's so neglected that now I attract the flies. One day my wife went shopping down at the nearby mall. She left old darling Dandy standing in the stall. He looked so smug and sassy, I couldn't help but grin. I think I'll saddle that fat sucker and take him for a spin. Well, I have since wondered if the cues I gave he misconstrued. Because when I climbed aboard that horse, he rightly came unglued. He bucked and whirled and snorted fire and pitched me through a fence. I saw big scars near a teeth that I ain't heard from since. About that time, the wife came home and saw me laying in the dirt. She ran up to that horse and asked him, "Oh, sweetheart, are you hurt?" Oh, he skinned his nose a little, but the memory galls me yet. She left me lying in the mud while she rushed to call the vet.
And that was Horse Husband's Lament by cowboy poet Donald Crowell. Coming up next, we have a horse husband who I really want to know if he knows what he married into with that family. His name is Tom Laux. You might recognize the last name because Debbie Laux is the host of the Horsemanship Radio Show here on the Horse Radio Network. She's also the daughter of Monty Roberts. And everybody, you know, for all you horse husbands out there, he trains the Queen's horses. Does that give you an idea? It was the original Horse Whisperer all those years ago. Just ask your wife. She'll know exactly who he is. And Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Glenn.
You know, when we married into the horse husband things, you know, our wives maybe owned a couple horses, maybe they competed, you know, at some level or another, or maybe they were just starting out and competing. You married a horse person's dynasty. Did you know what you were marrying as far as the extent of the horse thing?
Not really. I was not a horse person at all, and I still remember one of the first times I went to the ranch, which was there. I mean, Debbie and I were married in 1980, and Monty was doing his work in the round pen, nobody watching, and doing a join up, which, you know, I think if I would have understood horses more, I would have thought how amazing it was. But I thought, well, this is pretty interesting. I never saw it, how difficult other people made it. So I just thought, oh, this looks pretty easy, and watched him do his work. And then that was really before he was, you know, the Queen's people came over and his book came out. And then after that, I realized, wow, this is a big deal in what he does. So,
and the farm was really big then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was both sides, and I didn't see it when we got married. It didn't have the other side of the highway, but it was big.
Yeah.
A lot of horses.
I'm sorry we missed you. We were just out there visiting with Pat, Monty's wife, and Debbie, and we missed you. So I'm sorry we didn't get to meet you when we were out there.
I know. I met Jamie in Arizona. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, she's coming back, too. That's my normal co-host of this show is going to be heading back there for a couple weeks.
Yeah, so, that was fun. I was excited to meet her, and I'm really excited that she's getting excited about being an instructor and taking it further. So I know Debbie's thrilled with that.
Well, and it's been a joy for me to work with Debbie and to do the shows. And it's just, I'm the one that kind of talked her into it. So you can blame me for that. but it's just been a joy. And I really think she's coming out and, you know, starting to sink her teeth into it a bit. So
yeah, she enjoys it.
Well, let's talk more about you. When you met Debbie, what were you doing?
So what were you doing and how did you cross paths? Because it doesn't seem that these husband, horse, wife relationships always seem very unlikely. There's no.
Yes.
So how did
and
that
had,
happen?
Had nothing to do with horses. I played on the tennis team at UCLA, and all the guys in the team would meet in this one dorm, Sproul Hall, and Debbie would see us. She was in Sproul one quarter when I was in that same dorm, and noticed the tennis players, knew I was on the tennis team, thought my name was Scott, interestingly enough. And I don't remember if we met, we probably rode in the elevator, but I never met her. So then by the time I'm a senior, our coach said, you guys in the off season need to Nautilus weight equipment just started, Nautilus gyms. And so he said, in the off season, I want you to go join a gym. Now they have a lot plusher deal now where they have their own weight room and everything else. But so I went to this gym in Brentwood, California, and the guy that owned it said, hey, I'm busy right now, but there's this young lady that's worked out on our equipment for several months and can kind of show you around. And that was Debbie. And so as she's showing me the different weight machines, I'm thinking, gosh, you know, I'm going to ask this girl out at some point thinking I'll see her. This was September of my last year, thinking I'll see her on campus. And it was not till January where I saw her again. So I had to take advantage of that right when I saw it. So we started dating at that point, but that was our story. So nothing to do with horses.
Now, and she had seen you first, basically?
She had seen me first. She knew I was on the tennis team. And
Scott. She knew Scott was on the tennis
team. She'd actually watched from her dorm window the players playing. So I called her really my first stalker. She doesn't really like that when I say that.
And then you went on to play tennis, right?
Yeah, she didn't stalk me too hard if you know my name. But but yeah, we had a great team and it was fun. And then I talked her into marrying me, moving up to. I showed her Seattle in August. For those of you that know the weather, there's two seasons: the August and the rainy season. So, being a California girl, I was smart enough to show her how beautiful it is up there in August, and didn't kind of warn her about all the rain. But I taught tennis up there for, you know, about 14 or 15 years and full time. And we both were busy. She wasn't doing much in horses at that point. We had two young kids and she was working and some of that time. And then we ended up going, I grew up in Eastern Washington and we moved over there for several years. And then at that point, Monty was starting to build up his business, and my kids were getting, I didn't think my kids would be tennis players. I thought they'd be golfers or do something else, but they ended up getting really serious about tennis. So it kind of became logical to move down to Orange County, which was kind of a nice area that we enjoy and close enough for Debbie to do things up in Solvang, which is where she is today. And my kids pursued tennis, played college tennis, and there's a lot of stories with them, which was fun.
Are they playing professional tennis now?
They're not. They played a little bit. Both played a little bit professionally. Both played, pretty high level tennis. I mean, my older son Matt was number two in Southern California in the boys' 18s, and Adam played college tennis. And Adam played at USC.
You went to UCLA and he went to USC.
I know, that was a tough.
Oh man, you just want to.
I know. It was a good situation at the time for him. So I thought, you know what, I'll just
suck it up.
And yeah, we did go back to, it was funny because we didn't, you know, there's a huge rivalry, but I never knew. We went back to the Notre Dame game when SC, actually the Bush Push game, we were at that game because they had a tennis event earlier in the day. And so at the end of the game, we went down for the SC players were all celebrated. The team was celebrating and the bands down there. And then they have their song. And I'd never heard what their song was. And and we're Debbie and I are listening to it, and all of a sudden it becomes a UCLA bashing song. And Debbie and I look at each other like, hey, we're not even playing SC today. What's happening? So I guess part of their song is to throw UCLA under the bus also. But anyway, it was fun.
And that's funny because I was accepted at Notre Dame. I never did go, but that's where I was destined to go. So that's funny that you said that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It sounds like horses weren't like a really significant part of your like courtship or your life early on. You sort of, so I don't know any of this story at all, Scott.
Not at all. Not at all. Right.
But when did horses sort of like, there's clearly a significant part of your life now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never, she would be courteous. She wasn't a big, Debbie was not in love with tennis. She played actually some tennis in high school, and I taught her when I first started getting playing, and she played at the club. But so when she asked me to ride horses, I would say yes, out of, you know, we've been married 35 years, and I think we know how to, when one of us asks the other to do something, we know what, how to score points for that in that area. But I remember usually when I ride a horse, something exciting happens. I still remember one time in Sun Valley, we went and she took me on just the trail ride. And as we show up at the stable, one of the horses is on the ground. They were getting ready to, it would actually have the saddle on it, and it had gone into labor. So that was, so,
wow.
So that was,
work them to the end.
Yeah, work right to the end. So, Debbie would have to explain to me how ridiculous that was. But then last time we rode up at the farm, she asked me, let's go riding. And so I think there was somebody else too. And we were riding, and I had always taken their dog for walks up where these llamas were. And I'd kind of forgotten about, Debbie's 10 steps ahead of me on what horses are going to think about her. And so I'm riding a horse next to her, and she sees this llama getting ready to just kind of bolt towards the horses, and I didn't see it. And then all of a sudden, you know, my horse just does a, you know, 180 and starts taking off up the hill. And even though it was probably 15 feet, it felt a lot longer. And anyway, so she's told me afterwards, she said, you know, I saw that coming. And I had no clue what happened. What, you know, all of a sudden my horse just took off. I had no idea what had happened. But so usually something exciting happens when I get involved with horses. But she got, once we moved down here, was when she really got back into it and really enjoys riding and all of her, you know, the stuff she does every day, she has a great time with. And it's interesting enough where she drags me into a lot of it, and I enjoy helping out and really believe in what, you know, Monty's concepts are doing in the horse world. And that part, because of my teaching background, I'm really fascinated with really the psychology and the incremental learning. Because really, to be a good instructor, even in tennis, there's incremental learning. If you're going to get somebody from point A to point B, you got to take them through the right steps to get it. And if you don't know the steps, it's going to take a lot longer. And that's really what I see Monty doing in the round pen with horses, when they, you know, there's just certain little steps he has to take, and which breaks down walls to take the next step. And so I really, even though I'm not a horseman, in fact, I did one join up myself, and Monty had to come in the round pen afterwards, because I think the horse had a lot of unanswered questions after I was in there with it. But but it was fun. I mean, we really enjoyed doing it. I can watch join ups and really tell what's going to happen or should be happening. I've seen so many of them with him, but I'm definitely not the person that's the horse expert. But
what do you think? What do you think now? You know that Debbie's off meeting the Queen and doing all of this. It's a whole different. Right, and then we have to talk to you. I have to ask you about a certain photobombing too. But you know, now it's changed too. It's like at a whole new level from where it was before. Monty's going to be involved in the 90th birthday celebration over there at Buckingham Palace, and it's just a whole different world now.
Yes. Yeah, I was, I've been over there once. They kind of wrote me off, so I didn't really get next to the Queen, but the Debbie's really had a great time meeting her and really thinks highly of everything about her. So I'm glad that she's had that opportunity, which is pretty amazing. So yeah, it continues.
And what I like about, so I don't know anything about Monty Roberts, but I know that he's got this horse whispering thing.
There's the way a horse husband puts it right there.
There's this horse there's this whispering thing. He whispers sweet nothings to
that's
the horses.
Right. Yes, that's right.
And then the horses do what they want. But no, I watched my wife. My wife, she trains wild Mustangs.
Okay.
And you know, people often ask her to. They should write a book. She should write a book about her method. She should do a video series about her method so that people can emulate the method. But when you start talking about whispering, you use those types of metaphors. You start really understanding that what you're working with here is experience, and you're working with developing relationships with these animals, and that there are these tools that you have available to you to start work with horses. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to is being able to identify the needs of the horse, and to be able to identify those needs and to address them in appropriate ways in the context of that relationship. What I've also seen with Elisa is the fact that, and this has only occurred to me in the last week, is the fact that you have these wild Mustangs and all they want to do is run or fight. And that's all that's on their mind. But the minute you start to work them into calm those instincts and to allow them to say, okay, you don't have to worry about running or fleeing anymore. You don't have to worry about feeding yourself or protecting yourself. That then allows them the opportunity to cultivate different skills and capacities and joys that they wouldn't otherwise have the ability to experience in exactly the same way that you see it in human beings. You know, if you have a human being, you know, all their worry is, where's my next meal coming from? There's not a whole lot of other intellectual capacity that they have to develop other skills or abilities or joys. But the minute you say, okay, you don't have to worry about that anymore, now what are you going to do? Then they're able to cultivate themselves in new ways. And the same thing happens with horses. So this is all to say, you know, Scott, I mean, Tom.
Yeah.
that the kind of work that people like Monty do, and the approach that they bring is really, you know, because I'm looking at Monty's Facebook page here. It says, my life's goal is to leave the world a better place than I found it for horses. You know, it really
and people
is.
Too. Yeah.
And
people too.
And, yeah. And for people.
Yeah.
And for people. And it's you know, enriching people's lives, their experience of horses. They're not just animals. They're not just machines. They're, you know, companion animals with whom you can enter into a relationship. By the way, Tom, I should tell you that I'm a philosopher.
Okay.
but by training. So,
okay.
So that's where
I agree with everything you said. Yeah, there are a lot
But it's just a wonderful thing that people like Monty are doing in the world. So I applaud that. Thank you for introducing me to Monty Roberts. I'm now one of his biggest fans. And I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to enter into this world, unlikely though it may have been for, you know, a tennis pro like yourself.
I know. Yeah, I feel blessed every day.
Well, now, I saw a picture on Debbie's page, and I thought this was fun. And I have to get back to us. Most of us horse husbands are geeks in some way, shape, or form, right? And so there was a party at the club. Was this in Seattle?
Yeah, it was. They were honoring. I was one of 17 players that were honored at the club. They had their 125th anniversary, and they honored several players. I know Tom Gorman. I don't know if you've heard of Davis. He was one of them, and so they invited me to be one of the people they honored, which was nice.
That is very nice. And Debbie took a selfie. I got to tell Timothy about this. Debbie took a selfie, and she got photobombed by Bill Gates.
Yes, I didn't know that till after the event. He was at the event and spoke a little bit, and then there's one photo where, you know,
he totally photobombed her.
Yeah, he totally did. It was really, you were laughing about it. It was really cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. I mean, it was silly almost. You know, you see Bill Gates over there basically making a funny face at Debbie Selfie.
He was a member of the club when I was there. That was really during the boom in Microsoft. I was there obviously Microsoft continues to grow, but it was 80. I was there like 86 to 90.
Oh, so he was still really driving the ship at that point.
Yeah, and he wasn't. I saw him one time buying a racket. I never saw him play. I taught his mom, but now he's playing. I guess
he's got time now.
Yeah, he talks about it being one of his hobbies. Yeah, so he's out there.
Well, that's very
cool.
Can
we put a link to this picture? Is this picture
I'll find the link and we'll put it. Yeah, Debbie won't mind. She posted it, so she won't mind if I post it.
Awesome.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll post it in our show notes as well.
Great.
Well, Tom, so what would you say has been the most redeeming thing of ending up marrying a horse girl?
Well, you know, I would say for me and for Debbie, and I don't know if she'd be the, I only can judge, she's my only wife and only horse girl I live with. So it's, but, you know, she's so passionate every day when she gets up that, I grew up so passionate about my tennis, and I know how much fun it is to get up and focus on something every day. And she gets up every day, looks forward to, whether it's her podcast and doing things with you, or whether, you know, obviously most of her day is helping Monty or helping his concepts, thinking about where those, where they're going to go, and even the next 10 or 20 years, that, that part is fun for us as a couple. And also just for her, you know, I know that she's so passionate about it, and she's up, you know, she's up in Solvang. She drove yesterday. She'll drive back tonight, and she goes back again Friday. And that's like a 3.5 hour drive. So she's, you know, she loves it. And so I guess for me, it's not so much about the horses, but just that, because she's so passionate. And also it's easier to be passionate about something when it's, when you believe in the cause and about the welfare of the animal. And so, you know, it's a good thing, and that kind of keeps you driving. I think that's why Monty at age 80 is still, you know, so, and, you know, obviously Pat too, with all the things she's doing, but they're both, for their ages, very active and, you know, mentally and physically, and, just keeps kind of your dream alive. And I see that with Debbie too.
You know, one of the highlights of doing what I do for the last 8 years, and really the Horse Radio Network growing to the point it has been getting to hang out with some really, really cool people. And I consider the whole Roberts clan and you guys all included, that's been truly one of the highlights for me over the past 8 years, is the relationships that I've been able to make with Timothy and Elisa and Tom and all of the co-hosts and the all of our listeners. But, you know, that's what makes it all worthwhile and so much fun. So that's a roundabout way of saying thank you for lending me your wife a couple times a month to do a show.
I appreciate that's it. Great. And she enjoys it, and she enjoys you and everything about the show. So,
well, good. Thank you, Tom. What do you do now? Give a plug for your, what you, whatever you do now. I don't even know what you do now.
Oh, you know, I do have, you know, I'm really more of a private investor now, but what I'm really excited about.
I was hoping you were going to say private investigator. No. I heard it, and I hoped for it. It didn't happen.
You had to picture the hat and the pipe, and
now I'm totally sad. But like, investors. Now,
what I'm excited about is, I think as you get older and you see the impact that you've had with kids, tennis. When I taught tennis for years, I pretty much was focused on the job of making a kid a better tennis player, and then afterwards you figure out. In fact, when I went to that Seattle event, a lot of my students came up to me and you really hear the impact he had just really in their life. And so I'm doing some things at our church with foster kids and some motel kids that would really never have an opportunity to play tennis. And so we're setting up, there's room to set up some nets inside some buildings with Velcro lines and foam balls, at least to give them a start. And so I've been doing that, and the church is really behind it. And I think that's something that, it's going to have a big impact on these kids. So that's probably the thing I'm the most excited about.
Good, because I could hear when you were talking about tennis that you kind of missed it. And I like the fact that you're doing this and allowing, you know, kids, who knows what one of those kids might end up someday.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so.
Good for you. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Take care.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm just a carny clown. I live for the roaring crowd. My stage is a grimy tent, which I share with elephants and lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. I joined at a tender age with dreams of seeing far off places. But now that I've been coast to coast, the thing I think I miss the most are friends who do not have tattoos. Oh my. Sometimes I wonder what a real life would be like. Two kids and a wife, and going home each night. And when the circus rolled round to our sleepy little town, we would join in the crowd and laugh at the carny clown. My best friend stands 3'4". His name is Ernest McLemore. He juggles fire and walks on stilts. Yeah, he lives bigger than he's built. He's petite, but larger than life. Oh my. Sometimes I wonder what a real life would be like. Two kids and a wife, going home each night. And when the circus rolled round to our sleepy little town, we would join in the crowd and laugh at the carny clown. I'm just a carny clown till the late show lights go down. Then I wipe off this grease paint grin and climb back on the train again. And roll and roll and roll. Oh my. Oh my, my, my.
Well, welcome back, and welcome to the show, Brian. This is Brian Rosati. Rosati, we just had this conversation, and I'm already getting it wrong. On the show, Brian is one of the winners of the Horse Hubby Calendar Contest. His picture is epic. I think it might actually be, even be poster worthy. He takes on a lot in his role of a horse husband, and he's also recently written an article for horsehubby.com on some essential characters of a horsewoman. I talked about this earlier in the show. I was flabbergasted that it didn't cause more of a stir among the women readers, but everybody seemed to basically nod their head and say, yep, that's about right. So welcome to the show, Brian. Glad to have you on.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So Brian, what... Let's talk a little bit about the article itself. What motivated you to write about the essential characteristics of a horsewoman?
Well, ironically enough, it was a long drive to Ocala. So when you're driving to Ocala from Daytona Beach,
trees,
no cell coverage, a large forest, and nothing but time on your hands. That happened to be what came up.
That's the most boring road ever, Timothy, is that road between Daytona Beach and Ocala. Through the Ocala National Forest.
Exactly.
It sounds so majestic.
Oh, yeah, it's just nothing but trees on both sides of the road and occasional deer and bear. That's about it. Yeah.
That's it. So as I was driving, you know, not that we would not use hands-free devices while doing this, I was taking notes about things that just, you know, stuck out in my head about, a horsewoman.
With pen and paper.
You could do anything you wanted on that road. It's so boring. There's nothing. So,
well, hey, we'll blame Siri for any of the issues that we have with the actual article itself. So,
that's funny.
Were you driving alone?
I was, and I was not on a horse-related trip. Ironically, when I was heading to Ocala, so I was trying to actually take care of some of the man hobbies that I enjoy outside of horses whenever that time I actually...
Oh, what are those? Now, I want to know about those. What are that? What's that?
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you get lucky, and I will say, you know, I'm on my second wife, and if the first wife had been a horsewoman, I'm not sure there would have been a second wife who was a horsewoman, but I did luck into a gal who did not really disclose all of her horse personality when I met her, as most of them do not, it seems. And I was into high-performance driving and cars, so that's where I spend my recreational time if and when time avails itself to me.
That seems to be fairly common, but it's not uncommon to be into high-performance automobiles as a horse husband. We've had another horse husband, Jay Miller, is also a high-performance vehicle enthusiast.
Yes, I've actually, I guess Facebook chatted with Jane as he partakes in some of the same activities I do, although we never cross paths. So,
what a day we're having here on the show. So far, we've had a helicopter pilot that fights fires. We've had a professional tennis player, and now you.
These are some badass people. And then Glenn, you sit in front of a microphone all day.
I know. I do nothing.
And I sit in an office.
Timothy sits in an office at a college. Timothy, you do a dangerous thing every day. You drive Route 75 to Atlanta for 2 hours. You probably got the most dangerous job of all of us.
I would say after being to Atlanta many times, I think Timothy takes the cake.
Well, I appreciate it. It's patently untrue, but I appreciate you making me feel just a little bit badass.
I would say I used to think cars were expensive until I met my first equestrian. Cars pale in comparison.
So where did the costs come from? What's the biggest cost that you incur as an equestrian partner?
It would probably be the ongoing mortgage payment that I seem to spend for board for not the one that we originally had, not the two that we needed to have a project horse, but probably the three we ended up with by the time all things were said and done.
So you're paying board on three horses?
Yes, sir.
You'd be better off with a mortgage.
I was fortunate. I did get one of them leased. So, one third of that has since disappeared, but now I got two. So if I wasn't crazy before I got involved in this, I am definitely the clinical definition of insanity at this point.
Well, I've been talking to my wife about this, thinking, okay, because I think you can oftentimes lease a stable, a 12-horse barn for the cost of, it doesn't work out quite this way, but for board for two or three horses, but then that doesn't include feed and stuff.
Yeah, and then you got to do all the work.
That's what she said. That's exactly what she said. She said, "Yeah, and then who's going to clean it? Who's
exactly.
Take care of it?" And I'm like, "Okay, I guess we have a pretty sweet deal."
That's how we ended up at the board situation. We were looking to move when my wife and I first got her back into horses. She did it as a teenager, and then as an adult has re-pursued this passion, and we were going to buy a place that had stables on property, and then all of a sudden we realized if we only have one or two horses, maybe three, we're never going to be able to leave said property because somebody's got to care for them. And if your horse world's anything like my horse world, reliable caretakers are not easy to come
by. Timothy knows it's all about that.
It doesn't matter what level of equestrian you are. Like my wife's a four-star eventer. We cannot find, it's so hard to find good help because the people who are good already are working at somebody else's property and they're not going to be letting go of those people anytime soon. So it's just high turnover. It doesn't matter even how much you pay them. It's not a money thing. It's a real challenge to find those people. So when you do find those people,
you got to find somebody who's willing to work their ass off. And that's hard to find today.
It sure
yeah,
is.
Yeah, well, I mean, most folks look at the younger generation, the millennials and whatnot, and it's, we see some of these folks come through the barn where it's, they think they're professional riders, like, let me show up to my fully prepped horse, run my class, and hop back into my warm car with a latte while you guys, muck the stalls, trailer them up, get them there, do whatever else is needed, so.
Is she an eventer?
No, she's a Western Pleasure and English rider.
Oh, okay, cool.
So very different discipline than the usual, you know, high profile stuff. That you
oh, you know what? Timothy doesn't realize this, but she's in Western Pleasure, and in the Western world, you thought your what? You thought Elise's clothing was expensive? You haven't seen anything till you buy those blingy shirts for $300.
Seriously?
And, oh my God! The Western
300 is that 75% off?
Because yeah.
We may have started it.
Oh, their clothing is 10 times more expensive than anything your wife has ever spent. They'll spend $1,000 for a cowboy hat.
They'll spend $1,000 for something from that looks like it's from 1980 with a bedazzler.
I wasn't going to say it. I was not going to say
it. Even bad
but I was thinking
like, it. It is a fashion disaster.
It's the same designers as for figure skaters.
Pretty much.
Same outfit, different season.
And we're not going to talk about how much the good cowboy boots cost. Yeah.
You know what? Well, I laugh because I look back at how I got schnookered into all of this. You know, when I was first approached, all we wanted to do was Western Pleasure. And so I'm told some of the things, and I am not a horse guy at all. So I have a year and a half into it, although I absorbed a lot in a year and a half. You know, I'm told, hey, I need this show saddle, which is going to be about, oh, $2,000. And, you know, I kind of guess, I'm like, $2,000 for a piece of leather that you sit on. But I need a practice saddle that's only going to be $1,000. Well, now I look back and go, I wish those numbers were anywhere near true. Because the real cost, when they realize that they want to show competitively, is at least 5 times that. And you end up with multiples of everything, you know, 2 of this saddle, 1 of this saddle, and you need a practice for this saddle and accessories, and it never stops. And then we decided we want to show English, which doesn't use any of the same gear. So you have to rebuy all of that other junk for a different discipline.
You know,
so you're actually not kidding. As I'm doing the mental math, because I don't work with cars either, but it really sounds like the horses are more expensive than the vehicles.
Other than the initial, well, and granted, you can get that crazy in the horse world too. Other than your initial outlay of cost to buy said vehicle, the horses, I could race every weekend, every year, every weekend of every month of every year, and I would still be into it less than I am in horse shows.
You know, Timothy doesn't have any idea what the Western world's like. We were at a store once, and this was years ago, and a guy in front of us, this is a store that made really good quality Western saddles for show, and the guy wrote out a check for $25,000 for 2 saddles.
Yep. Well, now you can spend that on one saddle if you get embellished enough in dripping silver, which is apparently all the rage these days.
And silver's so cheap now, but apparently when you beat it into submission and make it into a design, it's more expensive.
So exactly.
That's amazing. Now, but you know what does sound like a good, what does sound like a good investment, though?
Well, you could say this about the Western world. Since they hang on to everything from the 80s and the style doesn't change all that much, the resale holds incredibly well. I mean, you know, the saddle that you're paying $10,000 for today, you'll probably get close to that back out of it if and when, not when she gets out of horses, when the next latest and greatest version of that saddle is released and she needs that instead.
Fun. Well, let's go over, let's talk a little bit about the article before we run out of time.
I want to look at some of these things.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should jump straight to number 4 or jump over it.
Well, that depends on the rating of where you really want to take this show.
Well, we'll save that for a little later. Why don't we save that for a little later, seeing I'm the editor here. But let's start with number 1. There are only 3, and this was your article, Some Essential Characteristics of a Horsewoman. There are only 3 things a horsewoman does on time. A, feeding the horse. V, the vet, chiropractor, acupuncture, farrier, voodoo, witch doctor appointment, and the first shown class of the day. You are absolutely right, because every horse person I've known, including my wife, has been late for everything.
It's true, but it's not just a woman thing, right? So all women are late for everything. Like, that's one thing. But equestrian women have other reasons. Like, I've accepted the fact that we're going to be late because inevitably a horse does something. You know, a horse is being naughty. A horse injures itself. A horse does something that requires attention right then and there. It's always at the most inconvenient of time. But you can't just leave it. You have to address it, which means that you're going to be an hour late for things. It's not like your wife is putting her face on, right? If anything, she's going to leave for a party smelling like horse pee wearing 3-week-old jeans.
Well, I say, let's not kid ourselves. We know full well you have to dress your horsewomen if you want to take them out in public outside of the horse community, because breeches, boot socks, and flip-flops are a standard, or clogs or Crocs or anything of that nature. And they don't think twice about it before going out in public like that.
Well, I don't know what clubs you frequent, but in Atlanta, those kind of get-ups fit in right. They fit in real well.
You know, we're not talking about strip clubs, right, Timothy? I'm just checking.
Timothy would be able to get one view in for the $1 he actually has in his wallet. So.
Oh, I was supposed to bring more than one. Which brings us to number 4.
Which we're not going to talk about in the show. For our listeners, if you're curious about what number 4 is, visit the website. I don't think we'll be talking about that, but we're going to be talking around it for the rest of the show.
I love number 3. A horsewoman will cry more over an animal than they will ever do over you. And that's cry happy tears or cry sad tears. It doesn't matter what kind of tears.
But it applies sympathy in general.
It's true. Yeah, you don't get any sympathy.
Oh, you're lying on the ground bleeding?
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
You'll be fine. It's a long way from your heart.
But if the horse is feeling a little tender.
Yeah, call the vet.
Call the vet.
Yeah. Do you find yourselves questioning that too? Well, are you sure? Can we wait a day?
I want my wife to call the vet every time I'm constipated. I want it to be treated like an emergency, and I want special extra treatment for that.
Well, I got it bad at my barn. We have 16 horses at the barn I board at, and one of the riders is a vet who still calls the vet every time the horse takes a misstep, looks funny, looks at her sideways, you know, the whole 9 yards. So there is just no hope. They always need that reassurance that everything's okay with, you know, Fluffy.
In fairness, though, Fluffy is a really powerful creature, but they are sensitive. I had no idea until spending time, you know, the fact that, again, no joke, a horse, they're constipated. What does that lead to? Death. You know,
right.
That sucks, right? Like, yes. like a horse is feeling a little tender. You know what that leads to? Death. Like, it all leads to death. It's terrible.
Well, and you have to look at it, because either way, it's the horse's death or your death. Because if you knew about it and you didn't make that call to the vet or whoever other needs to come out and, you know, sacrifice chickens for the horse to get better, then it's going to be your death because you didn't do it.
Well, that's why I hate being left alone at home. So my apartment is literally connected and overlooks the barn. So, which is designed that way so that Elisa can, if something happens in the barn, she can turn the lights on in the barn from the apartment and see what's happening. When she's gone, I'm sort of wholly and entirely responsible for listening to everything that goes on. Last night, like, she's here. She was sleeping soundly, but I had this paranoid night where every little sound bothered me. We have one of our Mustangs kept getting, like, you know, falling down and not being able to get up. But it just made a lot of noise. But it freaked me out every time. With every noise, I got so freaked out.
Well, because if something happens on your watch.
And that's on me. And I don't want to be responsible. Yep. So heck, I'm going to call the vet. I'd rather spend the whatever. I don't even know how much it costs. I don't ask. I'm still trying to get used to how much vet costs for dogs. I don't even want to look at how much it costs for horses.
Well, before we run out of time, there's one other one, too, that I wanted to bring up, and you missed one on this one. Is there are two things that a horsewoman always needs more of. You put time at the barn, and by the way, if they say, oh, I'm just going to make a quick trip to the barn before we go out to dinner tonight, you're done. You're not going out to dinner. And it's number two is space for tack. Yeah, that never happens. But the number three, the third thing is actually if your barn has room for seven horses, there's seven stalls, you will have 9 or 10 horses. They will always have more horses than space. Is that true, Timothy?
Patently true. It's absolutely true. My eyes just got enormous because I'm like, you're so right. That's the math. There's an equation.
Well, you know, I follow all these ladies on Facebook, and I understand, you know, most of them are broke. I think that's probably number five, and we're going to get there. But yet they all tag each other in the next horse that's for sale, needs rescued. It looks pretty on, you know, the video of movement they've shown. Oh, wouldn't this make a great addition for whatever's coming up? And I'm like, wait a minute, don't we already have a full cart?
It's a culture of enablement. It might as well be a group of, you know, alcoholics. No, just have one sip. Just try it out. Just take it for a spin.
And they always seem to find the neighbors who have an extra field. I don't know how they do it, but it's like a magnet. They know the neighbors that have that extra field that we can borrow. And it's always just borrow until I can sell this horse. And then there's five horses over there before you know it. And guess who's feeding those when the wife is away? So there you go.
This is blowing my mind because I thought that was just like my own local experience. No, that's everybody.
No. But hey, we got to do this. You know, we got Western on here. We got English. I got a retired competitor in the eventing world. And now getting into Western dressage of all god awful things. Just kidding. All you Western dressage people. It actually wasn't that. It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. But I'm required to say that as a horse husband. Timothy, you had another thing to talk about. We'll include Brian in this before we end the show, because a really interesting conversation happened on the private Horse Husband Facebook page. Tell us about that. Let's talk about some of those with Brian here.
Well, yeah, I know some of the members of the Horse Hubby Network, which is a closed Facebook group. I'm constantly curating and make sure that the women aren't let in.
Yeah, good.
So it's only for horse husbands. It's only men. So we have these conversations. But someone raised the fact that, you know, their wife was, it's cold up north. And so for women who are competing, they often have to move down south for the winter to sort of continue competing, which sort of led to a broader conversation about what happens when your wife is out of town. What do horse husbands really do when their wife goes away? And several common themes emerged. Surprisingly, video games.
And we're talking away. Like, there's a lot of wives in Florida right now where the husbands are still in the snow up north.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So far away.
We're talking months.
Time on your hands.
Yeah, months.
Right.
Yeah.
But in my case, even for a weekend. You know, what happens when your wife is away for a weekend versus an extended sort of time away? It's your wife is away. It basically what happens is that you immediately descend into, and I'm glad that no women are listening. You immediately descend into the state of like not even bachelorhood, because we all sort of learned how to survive as bachelors, but like pre-bachelorhood where we don't really understand what's going on. It's sort of we just are gluttons for everything that is terrible for us. Video games, junk food.
So true.
Booze.
In Florida, my wife doesn't get away. But, you know, fortunately, there's enough barn trips that I'm left wondering if she's coming home sometime this weekend. So, you know, it's a dangerous plight we face. And then I find myself, sadly, actually missing the horses sometimes. I'm an animal person at heart. So I'm the soft, fluffy, feed me treats, and I think all of my horses know me as that guy. And, you know, I find kind of going through withdrawals if I don't have a show once a month to go to and hang out and be with the animals or go to the barn for a couple, as in 12 hours a day to just do whatever the horse requires or just watch the horse or stare at the horse or, you know, usually hold something, blow dry something, vacuum something, pick up something heavy, mend, fix, or whatever else it is, because the only person with testosterone that shows up anymore is me.
One of the things too, when our wives go away, we're usually good. And this is true when we go away for them too. I'm not quite as quickly, I don't think. But we're good for the first couple of days. And then we start to get fidgety because I can only play so many video games. And then I really start to get bored. So, and then you start to get fidgety. And then after that first week, it gets really tough. And then after about a month, you kind of settle in and then they come home. So,
right about the time when you forget that they exist.
That's right. Right about the time when you're really enjoying not having the horses around, they all come home. And that's what happens. Am I right about that? That's kind of the theme that came out of that whole discussion.
Very true. Very true. It's good to see at least the Horse Hubby Network lets us know that everybody has the exact same challenge we do.
Oh, you
and
know
you
what?
You always think you're alone.
I've been doing this for 30 years. Not. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I watch all you youngsters going through the same thing I did, and I just laugh.
There are these patterns, but what also comes up is that we have these shared funny experiences and frustrations and but gosh darn it, we love our wives.
We do.
We miss them when they're away. And we miss the horses. They become such an integral part of our lives. We really wouldn't have it other way. And it becomes difficult to imagine it every other way. We come to understand just why our wives love their horses so much.
Timothy's trying to make sure he stays married tomorrow. We're covering bases right at the end of the show here.
Well, actually, he knows there's a cold front going.
Yeah, that's right.
In the barn with the horses right now is going to be a frosty night.
Does she listen? Does Lisa listen to this?
You know, from time to time.
Oh, okay. Hi, Lisa. We love you.
Brian, you have also taken on, you do some announcing of your own, don't you?
Well, you know, in typical horse person fashion, you know, somebody bailed out on the show the day of the show, and I happen to know the people putting the show on, and all of a sudden my phone goes off at 8 o'clock in the morning, says, our announcer bailed, would you do it? And, you know, usually it's just a very low key, you can barely understand what's going on sort of show. So I get up there and I have a little bit of a zest for life. And in case you can't tell, I'm a bit sarcastic. So they hand me a microphone and leave me alone in the booth to announce the show, you know, what's going on in the ring. And I just have at it. And the crowd went crazy. And next thing I know, I'm the full-time announcer for these shows. Because they can hear me, they can understand. And I always look at what drives me crazy at a show. And, you know, I like knowing what's going on, who's up next, what class is on deck, what the results of the class that just left were. And I found out that most of the ladies at the show kind of appreciate that too. So we just go have a good time. And heaven forbid you're in my barn and I know you, because I will call you out over that announcement system and just have at it. And now everybody's starting to get the feeling of, oh, this is going to be fun. So I think a lot of people in the audience just attend the show just to see the comedic commentary that they're going to get about what's going on in the ring.
And it also goes to show that you can only keep your distance so long. Some people, they marry a horsewoman and they say, okay, that's your thing, I'll have my thing, and then we'll keep those separate. Keeping that separation doesn't tend to work. It doesn't tend to be sustainable. It either leads to a dissolution of the relationship, or what is most likely is you just sort of, if you can't beat it, you join it. It becomes a part of your life, and you contribute to that world in whatever ways that you can.
Well, you know, that is so true, Timothy, because just this past weekend was our award show. I ended up setting up the award show with the girls who run it. And then as we're finishing setting up, they said, hey, you have a nice camera set up. Would you be the photographer tonight? And ding, add another notch to the belt for things us horse husbands do for these ladies.
And you can't unvolunteer. So you volunteer once and you're that person forever.
Yeah, well, some of it, you know, not to pick on the men of the world, but, you know, we see a lot of males that run from this and are never seen again, whether it be the fathers of some of these kids, boyfriends, or imaginary husbands that they make up just to make them seem semi-sane. And, you know, there's very few of us of a certain chromosome in this atmosphere, so we get leaned on pretty hard for all things related to men.
Well, we're running out of time, guys. We could do this all night. I've totally lost track of time, so... We have to call it a day. I do have one more question for you, Brian. When you come racing in Ocala, where do you go?
Usually I don't end up in Ocala. I was going to pick up a tire machine out there.
Okay.
I race at Daytona, Sebring, a place in Gainesville called The Firm.
Are you doing stock
Road
cars?
Atlanta, Roebling. No, I do. It's called HPDE and time trials, where we race around the track to basically set the fastest time for each of our divisions.
And what are the cars?
So, it's a whatever you want to bring. So if you want to bring your mom's minivan, you can do that. I happen to race in a Corvette. So,
oh, cool.
You know, if we're going to go, let's go big.
Cool. Very cool. That's neat. I didn't think you were coming over here to race at Bubba the Love Sponge's track.
No. Okay. That's where I go for all you rednecks to sell me car parts on the cheap so that I can afford my horse habit.
Well, there you go. I've been up to Bubba's a few times. They have Daisy Duke nights where women get in free the shorter the Daisy Dukes are. So that shows you what kind of racetrack that is right there. I'm not making that up. I'll take you when you come down next time, Timothy.
Very good.
I'll bring my Daisy Dukes.
You'll get in free. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
If you want to read the article, horsehubby.com is where you can find it. Take care.
Hello, folks. Uncle Jimmy here, and welcome to the world of Uncle Jimmy brand products, where funny names mean serious products. Featuring Uncle Jimmy's Squeezy Buns, the squeezably soft hand treat that your horse will love. The award-winning Uncle Jimmy's Hangin' Balls. Uncle Jimmy's Sugar-Free Ball. The incredible Licky Thing, also in sugar-free. The amazing Uncle Jimmy's Pecker Wrecker. And the Big Licky. The infamous Uncle Jimmy Hangin' Ball was first designed by me for my own horses to help reduce the bad habits which come from stall boredom. It now can be found around the world. This nutritious, flavored, filled boredom buster will help keep your horses occupied and happy around the clock. Properly hung, it will last for weeks, provided you don't let your horse pin it, and Uncle Jimmy knows who you are. The ball comes in four flavors: apple, carrot, peppermint, molasses, and now sugar-free. Once again, welcome to the world of Uncle Jimmy's brand products, where funny names mean serious products, and satisfaction is 100% guaranteed.
Well, of course, you can find Timothy's website at what?
www.horsehubby.com. You can also find us on Facebook at, you know, facebook.com/horsehubby, Twitter at horsehubby. Basically, just Google horsehubby and you'll find not me, you'll find us, Glenn.
That's right. All of us hubbies. All of us in there together. And of course, tomorrow we'll be back with Horses in the Morning. Really Bad Ads is tomorrow, but I won't be here. Tomorrow, and I'm going to say it this way because I think it makes more sense, Tom Lauk's wife is going to be filling in for me, Debbie Lauks, host of the Horsemanship Radio Show and good friends with Jamie, will be filling in, doing her first Really Bad Ads. So that should be interesting. I'll be on my way to the American Equestrian Trade Association show in cold, snowy Philadelphia. So I'll be up there. And then Monday, we'll be coming to you live from Ada, like we usually do. I have Colleen, one of our auditors, filling in, who is the product reviewer for Eventing Nation. You know her. She reviews products for Eventing Nation. She'll be co-hosting with me on Monday morning, and we'll be bringing you some of the new products coming out to the market for the next year here on Horses in the Morning. So stay tuned tomorrow morning. Debbie Lauks, Jamie Jennings, all here, and of course, Coach Jen on Horses in the Morning. See y'all.